everyone. My name is Nisa, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm really happy to be here tonight because anytime I get to share what it was like, what happened, and what it was like now, I get to hear my story and the progress that I've made or anything I need to work on. It's funny, even when I'm sharing with a sponsor or people in my network, it's like only when I like really get to hear it out loud when I'm qualifying that I really understand how far I've come. My sober date is June 6, 2011, and God willing, I'll celebrate 4 years next month. And the reason why I like to say God willing is because I like to stay in touch with my higher power now, because I really thought, you know, previously before I came to AA, that I didn't need anything, anyone, you know, I didn't need to hear anything or anyone. So I try to understand and remember that I can't do this alone, and the reason why I'll be celebrating that 4 years is because I decided to basically change my entire thinking and my way of life. I grew up in Philadelphia. I lived in New York City for the last, 11 years? And now I understand that it was a total geographic when I moved here. You know, I thought I was just being young, wild, and free when I moved here, but now I understand that it was just me running away. I had a nice family. You know, my mother did the best she could. I lost my father really young, just suddenly. He died. And I didn't realize that I was carrying that with me for so many years. I thought I kind of dealt with it because I was pretty much a tough girl inside, you know. And it started to catch up with me around my teenage years. I began to act out in high school and things like that. But I always knew that the only way I was going to live my life the way I wanted was, like, through school. So, like, during my junior and senior year, I decided to, like, give it my all so I can get accepted to a good school, or school, period. If I can get accepted to a school, then I can live on campus and I can live my life the way I want. I can get away from this house, is what I always used to say as a teenager, this house. And I finally moved away, and, you know, that was the first taste of knowing that a geographic does not work. And that was my first taste of knowing that I go wherever I go. And, you know, I waited until I was exactly 21 to drink and have my first blackout. Like, I couldn't wait. It was like that night we went out, a friend of mine from campus, we went out, and all I can remember is like a tube shot of something falling on someone's shirt, someone being hysterical about it, and then me in the shower at my dorm throwing up. And, you know, I was clever. I waited until I was an RA so I could have my own room, my own little refrigerator. So I had a little left over. And you would think any person with any sanity would say, okay, maybe we won't go that far again. But it was almost like, oh, I love that, because I barely could remember anything. All I kind of remember is that it was fun. And, you know, when I started to think about doing things alcoholically, I vividly remember I was in my dorm room, and like I said, I had my own space, and I had this like Smirnoff vodka in my little refrigerator, and something said to me, why do you have to wait until later to have that? And I kind of did one of these, like no one's in the room, but I'm still like looking around, and I like drank it, and nothing happened. Like, nothing blew up, nobody got in trouble, no one kicked in my door, everything was fine, but I did feel some ease and comfort. I felt some, like, because there was a lot of things going on in my head, and I couldn't shut it up. And I really thought for a long time that I was just going crazy. For some reason, I can accept being mad as opposed to being anything else. And, you know, eventually I said, you know what, I'm sick of this school, and I moved to New York, like on a Greyhound bus. It was so dramatic. And I didn't tell my mother, which is another very much Anissa quality. I moved here. I knew what she was going to say. Finish your degree and then you can do whatever you want. No, I want to do it now. So I moved up here and, you know, I rented a room out in Queens, and, you know, I was doing my thing. And then I finally told her 2 months later, and she came up and saw that I didn't live in a crack house and everything was good. You know, I was like, okay. And, you know, I still wasn't doing anything alcoholically except that time on campus. And, but I would, what I would do is, and this is going to sound so corny, I would go to Webster Hall and I would like go to night when it's like free drinks and stuff. And I would just drink, but I felt like, come on, where is the like oomph that I, 'cause I still had that experience of that time where I blacked out and it was fun. And what I would do is just, you know, go to work on a week, and, you know, on a weekend I would go dancing and all these things, and that just wasn't enough. And then eventually I said to myself, look, why am I trying to put on this facade, man? I'm just going to wild out like I want to. So I started drinking, like, alcoholically, immediately. Like, I grabbed a bottle. I was living with roommates. I grabbed a bottle, went up to my room, locked the door, and drank the whole bottle. And, like, and I was just like, oh, well, I can do this, you know? But the problem was they started to notice things were missing, as in, like, it was like if you did, like, a speed-up, like, video, you would see the booze just, like, disappearing. And I wouldn't replace it because every time I would have the money replace it, I would say, well, I can either get some more or replace it. I'm going to get some more. And, you know, what happened was I thought to myself, well, you know, they're starting to give me looks, and I don't like that. So, you know, just like a clever, industrious alcoholic that I am, I saved up money to get my own place. I, like, ate, like, ramen noodles for 2 months to, like, save up for a deposit and all this stuff, and I got my apartment so I can drink the way I want. Problem was, I was able to drink the way I wanted to. And, you know, my bottom came up really fast. And but the problem was, it took a couple years for it to really sink in that I had crossed that invisible line, because I would say to myself, well, wait, I'm in school. But wait, I have my job. But wait, I have this apartment. Wait, my kitty's still alive. You know, like, all these things that said I wasn't an alcoholic and I wasn't so far gone. And eventually, you know, when you drink that way with no one stopping you, and I made sure my family stayed at bay, you know, everyone was in Philly and I made sure they stayed there. And, you know, those missed calls turned into no calls, and those texts turned into no texts, and I was able to do what I wanted to do. And it was so miserable and so sad because I was just waiting for someone to come kick in my door. I was waiting for someone to give me an intervention. Like, I would really watch the TV show Intervention and say, why won't someone do that for me? Like, as I'm drinking, mind you. And I'm just like, oh my God, if someone gave me that ticket to Arizona, I would go. But the problem was, no one was coming. Because I was smart. I was smart enough to know how to completely isolate. And no one was coming. And, you know, I remember calling my mother in the middle of the night, just, like, randomly saying, Mom, oh my God, I need you. And then, like, trying to spill the last 3 years of drinking onto her in one night. And she's just like, just go drink some water. And I was like, all right, Mom, thanks. But with that, and I learned later in AA that it's because she's not one of us. So she didn't understand. For a long time, I held that as a resentment. Like, I started drinking at her, as someone told me later. And, you know, so I had to save myself, basically. I had to intervene in my own life. I had to be willing to stop for myself because it was getting out of control, like, seriously. And the bad part was it didn't look like it was out of control. And so what happened was I decided that I did not want to live that life anymore. And I had no alternative. Like, I had no great ideas. Like, I'm very self-reliant, self-sufficient. You know, I got it. Oh, no, no, I don't need any help. I can do it myself kind of girl. But I had no idea what to do. So I went to the emergency room and told them that I no longer want to be on this earth. Now, not being too smart and being continually buzzed for, like, the last 3 years, I didn't know when you tell them that in a hospital, they don't let you go. So I was there, and you know what? That was my moment. That was my intervention, because I don't know how else that would have happened. And they took me up, and, you know, they detoxed me and things like that, which was great because I tried to do it by myself, and I swear 3 hours felt like 3 days. Mm-hmm. So I kind of thought that this was just going to be my lot in life. And, you know, I had left that place and thought, okay, here we go. Now I can just reset. Everything will be fine. I can drink like a lady. You know how that story ends. So I was back in that place. And, you know, they said, won't you think about going to a rehab? And I said, yeah, because I remember when I used to wait for someone to take me to rehab. And I went there, and I swear that first night was the best night of sleep that I've had in years. My drinking was a very short time. It was 4 years, but I wouldn't have made it beyond that. I wouldn't have made it beyond that. Like, I hear people say, you know, I drank for 20 years and all these things, but I wouldn't have made it that far. So what happened was AA would come up every night. And I swore the counselors were, like, telling them stuff about me, because the things that they said was, like, spot on. And it's like, well, how does she know? And I told you that in confidence, is what I would say to my counselor. I told you that in confidence. How could you tell these people that? And it was like, no. She was like, no, it's because you're not the only person who's been through that. Mm-hmm. And I mean detail stuff, like how I thought I was the most cleverest person in the world who came up with the idea of vodka in a water bottle. What? Trademark Nisa. No, it wasn't. Everybody, like a lot of people said that. A lot of people did that in variations, whether it be an iced tea bottle, Gatorade bottle, it happened. So it was like a lot of my bubble bursting and that idea of thinking that I'm just this like unique creation. That, and it wasn't even like unique, like good. I felt like this defective, you know, like weird, you know, thing that goes in a bargain bin because it's irregular kind of person, unique. And, you know, for some reason, AA touched me. And I remember every night while I was there, I would like wait for you guys to come in. Like I would turn my chair around to the window and wait for the people with the stickers to come around the corner. And they said, make a meeting when you get out. And I kept seeing people who were in there saying, this is my seventh time being here. I kept seeing people who said, you know, oh, I'm not listening to them. But then they would be the ones getting kicked out. Or I'm not listening to them. And they would really go leave and be back before I left. Like, so I paid attention to that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know what, Nisa, your bright ideas have gotten you to this point. I didn't have that AA language of your best thinking got you here. This is all me coming to my conclusions. Your best thinking and your best ideas got you here. And so I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do the opposite of what comes to mind. And that's exactly what I did. Like, if I thought, no, I don't want to go to this meeting, I would go to the meeting. If I thought, no, I don't want to call this person, how does she know what I'm going through? I would call that person. And it was really because I couldn't trust myself anymore. And so I would just do the opposite of what came into my head. And thank God AA is a place that just, like, lassos you. Like, if you're that person who tries to hide in the corner way in the back and try to act like your wallpaper like I was, we'll find you. Well, that's exactly who we're looking for to come speak to. And thank God that you guys were like that, because that's exactly what happened to me. My home group is Greenwood Group in Brooklyn on 20th Street and 7th Avenue. And he has these like whales on the wall and it looks like a fire hazard. Like if somebody lights a match, it's going down. But it's my home. Oh my God, that room. I crawled into that room every day. And people were just like, you know, keep coming back and this and this and this and that and get a sponsor and, you know, share about what you're feeling. And I went through everything in that room. I laughed, I cried, laughed. I went through everything in that room. And I realized that the reason why we do this thing is because we get each other. No matter how different we look or seem or who has more money than who or who has those shoes and I don't and all those ridiculous things. You already know half my story just by seeing me sitting down in this room. You already know. And it's like, I love how in AA you can say, how are you? And someone, and you can't just say, oh, I'm fine. With that weird inflection that I get when I'm just bullshitting. Oh, I'm fine. No, they'll go, how are you? And like pierce your soul. Like I need that because I can very much fall into the facade and just give you what I think you want from me right now. And I can't do that anymore because it's not safe for me to do that anymore. And so, you know, I'm not going to pretend like it was all like daisies and roses after I came into AA. I thought I had the gift of desperation. I did enough to get me into AA. But when it came to doing the steps, I got a sponsor. And, you know, one, two, three, you know, one, sure, powerless, unmanageable, you got it. Two, yep, I'm insane, please restore me. Three, take it, I don't want it, you can have it. But when step four came around, it was like, take a fearless moral inventory of myself. What? That meant digging all that stuff that I've been pushing down for all these years up. It means excavating, and I didn't get the other part that was like, we're here to listen to you and we got your back. All I heard was, Nisa, you gotta pull up all that stuff and you're gonna implode. Like I thought the one thing that I was trying to do all my life is to keep all those horrible feelings at bay, and you guys were telling me that I need to purposefully pick them up and drag them out and tell you about them. So I did what you do, you know, when you don't want to do something in AA. You duck and dodge, you know, call my sponsor when I know she's at work, you know, text in at like 11:45 p.m. and like waiting and like kind of like I don't want it to be on the 45 because she's going to know I waited to this. So I'm like 11:47 or like all that stuff instead of just calling her. And eventually, you know, first sponsor, I made up some excuse on why she couldn't be my sponsor. Second sponsor fired me. And when I was floating in the air, I got really scared because I said, something told me if you don't get a sponsor immediately, you're not going to get a sponsor. Like, I thought that I would just, like, somehow start making up excuses and sort of float away. So I, like, ran up to this woman at a meeting who I saw, and it was definitely what you guys said. She had something that I wanted. I thought she looked happy and really happy. And I'm, like, the phony detector. You know, like, she ain't really happy. Like, I saw she was really happy. When no one was looking, she was happy. And I ran up to her and told her, and she was just what I needed because she didn't play games. She was like, how free do you want to be? And I was like, damn. Like, well, now, I guess a lot. I don't know. And so I would go to her house, and we would read the big book, and, you know, we would go through it, and it was like piece by piece. And here's what blew me out the water. After being sober for a year and finally deciding to finish my steps with this new sponsor, I finally understood and can clearly digest the doctor's opinion. And that answered all my questions. It was like, oh, that's why I can't go back to the way I used to be when I drank. And I could just do a little bit and then be okay for a few weeks. And that's why I'm constantly thinking about drinking even when I'm not drinking. Oh, it was like, it was really good. It was good for me to hear that. Because it first of all, it said, oh, wait, they cracked this code years ago. And this is what's going down now, Nisa. This is what's happening now. This is where you are now. And I needed that. I needed to really clearly accept that I was an alcoholic and accept that I was going to be in recovery. And after that step four, man, we drove to like Red Hook near the water and like went, had Fairway for lunch. And we sat in her car and I let it all out. And it was like emotional roller coaster. We laughed, I cried, I raised my voice, she didn't flinch. Like, it was all like cigarettes were smoking. And by the time it was like, and now go home and sit for an hour, it was just like, I really felt like this boulder was off my chest because it was a lot of things that may not sound that bad, but to me, they were dark secrets. They were horrible secrets about how I was a real manipulator, about how I was very selfish, on how I would only make friends because I figured I would get something from you, some way, shape, or form. And it didn't have to be monetary. It could just be company, which is, like, sad. So I came to those conclusions, and then I kept going through the steps, and, you know, I thought I would be afraid of step 9, but after you go through that step 5, man, you're ready. You're ready for what comes to you. And I understood that it doesn't matter what happens on the other side of it. And, you know, the first person who was on my step 4 as a resentment, she somehow made her way to the first person I had to make an amends to, my mother. And she was just so open and accepting of it. And cut to her coming to my group's anniversary and dancing the night away. And at the end of the night saying to me, you know, people who don't drink can benefit from this. Mm-hmm. And that was like, that, I thought she would like be embarrassed by me. And no, she was just so proud of me for where I was because it's like she could always see the person that I was. So, you know, I went through the steps and my sponsor told me, okay, now you gotta freely give what was given to you. And I'm like, oh, and here's the grandiose part of me that came. It was like, oh my God, if I get a sponsee, I'm gonna break her, she's gonna go out and all these other things. And it was like, and I'm like, how do you even sponsor? And she's like, you just do exactly what I did with you. I was like, oh, I can do that. And she was like, you're just gonna put your Nisa twist on it. That's all. And, you know, I did it. And someone asked me, and she stuck. And I didn't break her. And, you know, as my sponsor would say to me, I had a front seat to a miracle. Because it's crazy to watch someone be one way, crazy mind going, spinning, everything that you were, and then watch them saying things like, you know, live and let live. And, like, and saying things like, you know what, I'm not going to let that affect my serenity today. Like, that is like, and you see it happening. And then you wonder, wow, that's what people see in me. Like, that's how people view me. So, you know, this program and sponsorship is big for me because, I think my group sponsored me in the beginning because they were like, clean that coffee pot. And I was like, okay. And I cleaned the coffee pot, and I swear, I was, like, skipping home when I finished because I felt so good. And I got bit by the service bug, you know. And, of course, you get shanghaied into a bunch of things where people are like, oh, we're just going here. Next thing you know, you're, like, speaking or something. And, you know, it was, like, one thing led to another with service, and it was able to grow with me. That's what I love about service in AA. Wherever you are, there is a service position for you. You can be the chair folder and be the best darn chair folder there is. If that's where you are, you can be an outgoing speaker if that's where you are. You can be a GSR if that's where you are. Because the thing about service for me, which is so huge in my sobriety, so huge in my life, is it really helped me learn how to be a human being again. It really helped me learn how to deal with people again and not be a jerk and not be all about me and all those things that your traditions say. You know, it's not about you, girl. And it really helped me do that. Like, I wanted to get a job in nonprofit by the time, you know, when I finally finished school. I was like hiding out in school for 10 years, by the way. And I finally finished school and I wanted to go into nonprofit, and I lied to you not. Service helped me get it. Service helped me get it. Because I had all this experience of dealing with those kind of things that happens in nonprofits. And I interviewed and it worked out, and it was a lot of me saying we and us and all those things that I say in AA. And it's so funny, like during the icebreaker, I almost outed myself, because you know how you like say your name and all of a sudden alcoholic falls out? That almost happened during an icebreaker, and I was like, oh, AA is just so ingrained in me. And thank you. And you know, service is still in my life. Right now I'm the public information chairperson for Southeastern New York, Area 49. And I'm able to do what was done for me, which is somebody tell me what that program is all about. You know, I just yesterday I was in a high school in Brooklyn, and I was able to answer all these kids' questions about AA. You know, they hear little things, but they want to know, so does that mean you were an alcoholic? Yes. So, but you said you still had your job and stuff. Were you functioning? Not really. You know, like, so what happens in a meeting? And you describe a meeting to them, and it's like, I always have to remember that the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous was the first piece of public information that was out there. So we have to do that, like, though, you know, within your comfortability, because a lot of people, you know, if anybody in their jobs knew that they were, you know, they would be out of there. But for me, it works out. It's fine. I can go in there and I say, you know, I'm not speaking on behalf of AA. I'm a person. Here's my experience. And I can get to let these kids know who their teacher told me previously are having trouble with drinking and showing up smelling like booze. And I get to tell them that, look, don't wait until everything goes to hell. You know, if you feel you have a problem, come on in. Check out an open meeting. You don't even have to say you're anything yet. Just see what it's about. And, you know, I come home and I feel like, whoa, you actually are doing something in this world now. You're not just taking from this world. I was a taker. Take, 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 take. I will suck you dry. Like, I would take all your energy and somehow you'll be crying. Like, I was one of those people where if I was wrong, somehow I'll flip it around on you and you'll be apologizing. Like, I took pride in that. Now I take pride in being a stand-up person. Now I take pride of actually showing up when I said I was going to be there. I take pride in someone saying, oh, I know we don't have to worry about you. You'll be there. You don't know me. Like, if you knew me 4 years ago, you would not count on me. So it's like little things like that that are checkpoints to help me understand. And I am growing, and I'm not perfect. I still have times when I emotionally act out. And sometimes it goes inward where I get a little depressed. But here's the thing. Now I have these tools. Now I have this thing that I can go, oh, wait, let me see. Where on the triangle is am I slacking? You know, where? And I love that because I actually have something. It's like I used to always say, I don't know, I didn't get the handbook on how to live. And now I feel like I do have the handbook. I really do. I really feel like our 12 steps and our big book and our fellowship and somebody in here will be able to say something to me to help me through whatever little thing I'm going through, because you probably went through it too, or you've seen someone else go through it, and here's how. So I'm just so appreciative of this program and the fact that we meet up in these rooms and we get it. Some of you I don't recognize, but it's like, I know you. You know, we all have the same last name. We're all alcoholic, you know? So I'm so happy that I'm able to hear my story again and share it with you. And I hope that something helps you. And I would definitely highly recommend service because it's great. So thank you.
Thank you.